Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Let's Watch podcast. I'm your host, James, with my congested co-host, Carolyn.
That's me. Different voice today.
Different voice, same brain. and today we are going to be discussing Sunshine, the 2007 Danny Boyle film that Carolyn so graciously has the synopsis for.
Of course I do, and the synopsis tells us nothing, but it says, a team of international astronauts are sent on a dangerous mission to reignite the dying sun with a nuclear fission bomb in 2057. So we're getting there. We're getting close to this needing to happen. And it stars Rose Byrne, Cillian Murphy, Chris Evans, Cliff Curtis, Michelle Yeoh, Hiroyuki Sanada, and Benedict Wong.
And Troy Garrity, the man who didn't become famous.
Yes. And also Mark Strong, who does not look recognizable in this film whatsoever.
Or is ever really on screen.
No,
that is true. But definitely wore a lot of makeup.
Yes.
We think. Maybe they didn't, because this movie was only $40 million budget, which is way less than what I would have guessed of, because the effects still look pretty effective and good.
Yeah.
Also, I think, have you seen this movie before?
No.
So I had multiple times. I really liked it. This was the one that I kind of pitched Carolyn's idea on. I didn't see it in theaters. Yeah. I definitely saw it on DVD or whatever. I do, like, before we get into the movie, mm-hmm. I do think, like, it's incredibly, like, this is, like, a movie I think specifically benefits that literally most of the, everybody but one member in this cast became way more famous after this film.
Yes.
Cillian Murphy is, I said, like, a lead actor now, also in movies because of Peaky Blinders, and then I don't think we need to explain what happened with Chris Evans.
who?
Who? Skinny Chris Evans, but still buff?
Yeah. Still looking exactly like Chris Evans.
Yes, it's very, it's like he looks like a baby, but also the same.
Yeah, he, when he has his hair cut like that and he was wearing like that polo shirt, I was like, oh my God, this looks like him in a different movie, but I couldn't remember what movie.
Literally any Chris Evans movie in pre-MCU.
Like that's yeah. What he looked like. The Perfect Score or something like that. It was something like that.
Yeah. And then Rose Byrne, who, this is like, I remember the first time I ever saw her. And then obviously like Hiroki Sanada and Michelle Yeoh were already established, very famous actors, just not in Hollywood. Well, I guess Michelle Yeoh probably was because of Crouching Tiger. And then Benedict Wong before he became, basically MCU'd, and Cliff Curtis has been that guy in a million movies. Like he was in The Insider, for God's sakes. The movie that we watched previously. And I think this was right after Danny Boyle did Slumdog Millionaire, or right before?
Right before.
Yeah, so the movies he did that surrounded this film were 28 Days Later was a couple years before, and then Slumdog Millionaire and 127 Hours were right after. So,
yeah.
You know, this is, and it did not do well when it came out. It was a $32 million made at the box office, which I guess is like probably made its money back or close to. I don't know. That doesn't seem like a huge loss to me, honestly. That seems like for $40 million, like whatever. But it did not, it was a bomb is what they said. And it did not particularly get any notice in anything, but it has become like a cult movie. Like this is way more culty than Monsters. Because I'm really interested to hear what you say about it, but it is a movie, before I rewatched it, that in my head was like, that movie is so good. But I had forgot the parts I didn't like about it. Now, Carol.
Uh-huh. Yes.
What is your opinion of said movie?
Man, so Several thoughts. I thought it was, for a movie that seemed the entire time to know exactly what it was doing, I felt it very uneven in terms of me knowing what it was doing. Like the movie knows what it is. But I found I was really lost. Like there were, every time something new and spacey happened, I was like, sorry, did I miss something? Why did that happen? What is that? What is happening? Which kind of made it hard to like get behind those things.
What and I didn't.
Well, honestly, anytime that they're like, oh, there's a trouble with the ship, I was like, how did that happen? You know what I mean? And it happens a lot. But I was like, how did that happen? But like, it's okay because it's not about it happening. It's about them solving the problem or whatever. But man, where it felt like it jumped the shark for me was everything to do with Pinbacker.
Pinbacker?
Yeah, that was fucking weird because before that, it felt like a movie that was rooted in reality, right? Like it was sci-fi for sure. It takes place in the future. There's ships and things we don't understand. But the Pinbacker stuff was not that. That was like supernatural to a degree. And I also didn't like that every time he was on screen, it was like weird trick of light or like blurry camera movement. You never get to see him. I couldn't tell what was going on. And I couldn't tell where they were rooted in space. Not a pun, like literally in the room. I couldn't, you know, it was not grounded enough for me in those moments.
No, you meant that the way you meant that. Please, you didn't have to be like, oh, pun.
So you all intended. Of that Pinbacker stuff, I really didn't like that. But like what I did like was them doing the usual space problems of like, oh no, we have to leave someone behind. How do we, you know, everyone's dying. I liked when they ran into Icarus One and everyone has kind of seemingly lost it and killed themselves and destroyed the mission. And I love that kind of thing. And I do like it when it gets kind of horror-y and they're trying to get the ship back on course. They're trying to release the payload and they're trying to escape from this evil man. I liked all of that. I just didn't like that Pinbacker being on screen suddenly made it feel like a different movie.
Yeah, I agree that I do not like the filming technique either because of the budget limit restriction. Maybe like the effects on him just looked really shitty. Or the decision to make it that way, like he is like hard to look at. I just think there would have been a more effective way if you wanted to do that, to show him and not make it confusing and not really understanding what is happening in the confrontations with him and Cillian Murphy and Rose Byrne.
Yeah.
It was just confusing. I do think this movie, the third act does let it down in a way, or that part specifically does let it down, because before then, like all of the problems they encounter are like make logical sense, right?
Yeah, they make sense.
The guy made a mistake and he forgot. And then they go up there and then when they go up there and fix it, the rest of the crew, because they're thinking about this one problem, don't realize that it's going to cause this other problem. And then that happens and they have to solve it. And it's like a cascading errors that lead to people's deaths.
But it's like very human moments. And I think that's when they have the most strength. Like, yeah, a guy forgetting to reset the shields, like, it's human, and his blow up is human. And when they're sitting there with the classic railway problem of like, do we kill, you know, someone on our crew to save lots of other people? Like, I liked that stuff. I thought that's where it was really strong.
Yeah, and the moments of like until like they realize Pinbacker is on the ship. I think I really love that like 50 minutes of the movie. I think it's like really good. Like all of the character deaths that happen in that like up to that moment are like all impactful, and like some of them are very beautiful moments.
Yeah.
Or like moving, right? Like even though like you're not really attached to any of the characters because they're all just
you're not permitted to be attached to them. You don't know anything about them really.
No, and it from the outset of the movie is like these people are probably not all going to make it. But like what happens, this is full spoilers, so like I don't care. But like with Hiroki Sanada as the captain being like up on the top and like him getting vaporized essentially. But they have like important character moments in that, right? Like everyone else is like panicking to like screaming at him to get back because they don't want him to die. Yeah. Even though they like some of them have made the decision, and it's the correct decision that it's like, no, this has to be done, right? Like someone might die here, but like, we don't have another option. The mission is more important.
Yeah.
Cyril, the psychiatrist, is like asking him what it looks like. What is he seeing? Because he's obsessed with the sun. And then that's paid off later with what Cyril's death is. Yeah. But it's like, I love how like the characters drew themselves. Like I knew going in, but like what I really appreciated about what they did with Chris Evans' character is that he's like mission, right? But he's also a dickhead. Yeah. And an asshole.
He's not selfish.
And exactly. He's not the one who's panicking.
Exactly. And he's not yeah, because he's such a dickhead and doesn't like Kappa or whatever, you think that he would either want to be the one to save himself or would heroically be like, no, you save yourself. And it's neither, because you're right. He's mission focused. He's like, well, Kappa makes the most sense to save.
Kappa, so we're saving has Kappa. To go back.
Yeah. And I like that, because it's like, I don't want him to be the hero. And I appreciated that, with the exception of Pinbacker, there was no heroes or villains in this. There was just people and reacting in very unique ways.
Yes. And I think the Pinbacker thing is like, it very much felt like, at least to me, like when the airlock is blown, it felt like, okay, we need a reason why the airlock is blown. Okay, Pinbacker, right? Like, it felt contrived in that moment. Because when they're on the ship looking around and they find the corpses of the other crew on the original Icarus, it's like, count the bodies, guys, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know how many are missing. I guess they must have just assumed they were all there. They don't, you don't know. But like, that moment is good. Like, when they find them, you're like, oh god, right? Like, it's, and like, I like the shots of like, you see the ash shapes, and like the sometimes some of the bodies are like in frame but out of focus, so you never get a look at them, but it's like really effective. But then with Chris Evans, or like with Kappa, it's like, no, Kappa's gotta go back because he's the payload guy. He has to get the spacesuit, right? The rest of us are disposable compared over Kappa. And it very much felt like, even though Kappa and Mace, which is Chris Evans's character, like, did not like each other, and then Harvey's trying to like, I'm gonna go back because I'm the new captain, right?
Yeah, Harvey was a piece of shit.
Yeah, but it felt like to me in that moment that even though Mace hated Kappa, like, if Harvey tried to do that, Mace and the psychiatrist would have just killed Harvey, right? They were like, no, sorry dude, you were gonna beat you up. Like, even though we just mission, it's like the characters stay true to themselves. And then when they have that conversation about, like, with Trey, the man who screwed up the calculations that has led to all of these problems.
Yeah.
Like, when it comes to being like, he needs to die, right? Because they need the oxygen.
Yeah.
And Mace, Kappa, and Michelle Yeoh are all like, yep. And then Rose Byrne says no, but then she's like, it doesn't matter, you guys are going to do this anyway. This was all performative.
Yeah.
I really liked that scene as well. And it was like,
so did I. And I especially liked that they walked in and Trey had already killed himself.
Yeah.
And Mace was shocked by this, and he was upset by this, because even though he was about to go kill him, killing someone and seeing, like, killing someone because of the mission and seeing that they've already killed themselves because they're just so suicidal and depressed, it's a completely different thing. And they were all really upset that he killed himself, even though they were about to go do it for him.
Exactly. Yeah. It was like, for a movie that is mostly just like kind of a fun space movie, I think is how it was sold. Like, it does more with that. Like, that's,
many human moments.
Yeah. And then Pinbacker is the problem with this film. Cause like, I understand, like, the idea of Pinbacker is really cool, right? Like, a guy who survived or like chickened out at the last moment of like the sun thing. Like, who knows what happened on the ship? The implication is that he kills the rest of the crew with the sun thing. Or something, I don't know. But like, he is obsessed with the, like, loses his mind and becomes like obsessed with the sun, like what the psychiatrist is kind of doing.
Yeah.
But it very much felt like, we need a reason for the airlock to be blown, so we're going to get Pinbacker on the other side to blow it. And then from then on, it is very much like, we need, these decisions are getting made. What is the character decision that they're going to do this? And then I think I would have even overlooked that a little bit more. But the filmmaking technique for his scene specifically, until they're in the payload, is bad.
It is, because it's like, it's, it made him feel like some surreal character, this whole blurry camera and lighting, and like, he looked like he was half melted all the time. And like, I just didn't like the choice. Every time we saw him, it felt like a different movie, and it made it feel very like mystical. And I don't know if that was the intention or not, but like, because there are several times, like, I like the way you just described it, like, the idea that some guy kind of loses his mind and is like, let's not drop off the payload, let's all burn ourselves, and then he chickens out. But they didn't pitch him like a human character, because there's so many moments where he shouldn't have been able to survive, and he did. And he was, like, seemingly had, like, super strength and stuff, so he didn't feel human anymore. He felt like an alien or a being of some sort. And I didn't like that, because I'm like, well, is he supernatural? I would prefer it have just been a human, you know?
Yeah, I agree, because like when Kappa finds him in the observation deck, mm-hmm. he's like doing push-ups when the rest of them are like so exhausted from the lack of oxygen.
Yeah.
That they can like barely move. And it's like, okay, so this guy is like either trained with extreme, like he's been living in this level of oxygen forever, so he's just more used to it. But there's like no real explanation that he's got like really strong, and then only happens to find Kappa and Rose Byrne. Like he never encounters Mace, who mm-hmm. would be like physically at least a match for him.
Yeah.
And that he somehow is getting around the ship very quickly.
Yeah.
There is like no, we never, another flaw of this thing is that we never really get a clear layout of where the rooms are in relation to each other.
The ship seemed to get bigger in that last moment.
It did, yes. Like you need to run so far. It's because like they're either on the bridge or they're in the garden or they're in the payload, but we have no relation of where those are to each other.
But so also the payload was huge. It was the size of what I thought the whole ship was.
The payload was essentially the big thing at the front, right?
Yeah.
But like we have no, I don't know how close the bridge is to that, right?
Yeah.
Like I have no idea. Is that right beside it, or is the bridge all the way at the other end? So it's like, I just don't, or like, where's the mainframe store? Like, I just have no idea. So it's like,
well, especially since the whole rest of the movie, there's multiple characters in every room. If the ship is this big and only 8 people exist on the ship, then a lot more people would have been alone for a lot more of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, that's just an annoyance thing. Like, I just think it's that's like a script problem. Is like, you gotta, or like visually show us, even at the beginning, right? Like, you could just be like, this is where all the rooms are. Cause then I like at least know where the characters are in relation to other characters.
Yeah.
But if the rest of the, like without the third act issues, I don't think that would have annoyed me that much. That is specifically brought up because it's relied on in the third act.
Yeah.
Is that you never want, or at least I never want to be like, where are they? Confused when I'm trying, in like the climax of your film, really.
Well, yeah, no, exactly. Because Kappa's like stuck in the airlock, and then he comes out of the airlock and runs into where Chris Evans is dead now. And I'm like, oh, they were that close to each other? I didn't realize that. I thought they were on opposite sides of the ship.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, why didn't he come unlock the door before he did this?
Yeah, exactly.
Kappa was like asking him to do that. And he's like, no, I got to do this first. And I was like, it looked like you were like a minute away.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And I just, I still really like this movie. I think it's really effective in parts. It's just the pinbacker stuff.
It really lost me with that. It's interesting though, because my favorite parts were also the ending when they were making all these hard decisions, when Mace was diving in and out of the coolant and like dying. I loved all of that stuff. I just hated that I knew Pinbacker was running around being his melty ass self, trying to like strangle Cassie. And what's weird is his fights with Kappa seemed very sci-fi and supernatural. And his fights with Cassie seemed very like Freddy Krueger horror movie, and it mm-hmm. didn't seem to fit. It was really weird all of a sudden, because now you're fighting a girl, you're being like creepy, you know, like Mike Myers. It was strange.
Yeah I did like when the lights came back on, he was like hurt by them. And that made sense because he was living in darkness for so long, like that didn't need to be explained. But like it was like with Kappa, it was like, okay, like I'm so much physically stronger than you and faster that it's going to be like a 2-second interaction and then you're going to run away from me. And with Cassie, it was just like, okay, so this is like a drawn out sequence of like, she is able, like he does get her, like grab her, and then she's able to get away. And then it's like hiding around like a wall. It felt like, I didn't know.
Which is weird, because he seemed to know exactly where Kappa was, and he seemed to know exactly where everyone was, except Cassie was like around the corner and he's like, where is she? Like, it was weird. It was not consistent.
Also, that that is dropped because it goes back to what Kappa is doing, like releasing the payload and stuff, which is important, needs to be shown. And then he gets to the, Kappa makes it into the payload, and then Cassie is in there dying, and we're like, okay, so I guess Pinbacker did catch up to Cassie at some point, right? Okay. And then once Cap is in there, I do think that interaction is good, because at least you see Pinbacker, and the whole concept of like him dropping Cap like off the edge, but then because gravity's so wonky that they're both standing at each other looking over the edge of a cliff. I thought that was very cool and effective. It's like a really good moment.
Yeah.
And then they just don't care.
Yeah, the gravity situation. And oh my God, there were points where they were like sideways and walking on walls and things, but they didn't necessarily make it clear enough at certain moments that it was a gravity thing. It was just like, it was just strange.
Well, no, I like that though, because it would be like if they're spinning into a star, it would just be that. But then Pinbacker's like not important after that. Like you don't see him again. He's just like stuck up there. Well,
and also Cassie's all like, finish it. And I'm like, but why? The payload is going to hit the thing regardless of if you kill him or he kills you. It doesn't matter what you're doing. Might as well just sit down.
They have to activate it. They can't just go in. Otherwise, it just gets like vaporized. It has to like
explode. It seemed way too complicated to activate it, to be honest. I was like, this seems like it should be an easier process.
Well, I don't think anyone's supposed to be in there activating it. I think it's supposed to be getting activated, and then it's like a timer thing as it's falling into the sun. It just so happened that, you know, they had to do that for the movie. And then,
good
like,
thing
at the Kappa end of the
was
movie,
the only good. Guy alive still, the one guy who can activate it.
It's a movie, Carolyn. But also, like, the end of the movie, like, with Kappa's, like, death and, like, that wall of the sun is very good. Like, that's a very good scene. It's like a whole moment, and then it fades to white, which should be the end of the movie, in my opinion. But then we get a shot back on Earth, which very much felt like studio notes being like, people need to know if they're successful or not.
Yeah.
When a fade to white means usually success, but it is also ambiguous. I think it would be more effective with an ambiguous ending.
Yeah.
Because all that matters is the characters' journeys are over.
Yeah.
But Kappa thinks he succeeded. That's all that really matters for the movie, in my opinion.
Well, and I feel like people would have assumed.
Yeah. Also, it's like natural for humans to think that, right? Like it was like a thing. Another thing I liked about this movie that I think is very good is that the characters, even though they're extremely intelligent, like scientists and physicists and like, I assume the best of the best options of people to send.
Mm-hmm.
And when things go bad, they're all constantly still bargaining with themselves because they're still human, being like, okay, right, this is going to work out and we can still survive. When like they probably most of them know they're not going to survive.
Yeah.
But they're still going through the process of being like, no, we like, you know, if this and this and this happens, we might be able to get through this. And it's like,
well, that's the thing. They never give up on like up until a point. They never give up on, OK, we need enough oxygen to get there and to get home, you know. And then it hits a point where they're like, oh, shit. Now we just need to get there.
Yeah, exactly. And then.
Well, and even Cassie says it. She's like, it's very different to go on a mission thinking you might not make it home and knowing that you won't make it home.
Yes.
And she looks fucking beat that whole movie. Good Lord.
Yeah, it's I think, well, partly because the cast is so good that a lot of the actors are adding more to the characters through their performance than the movie has given them. Because
there's not a lot of script, right?
No. But it's like the scene at the when they're trying to decide if they're going to go to Icarus One or not, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, no, we're not a democracy. We're not doing a vote. We're a group of intelligent people. We're going to give it to the person who is the most qualified to make this decision, and they will make the decision and we will deal with it. And it's not the captain.
Yeah. It's like, no, we're scientists. We're going to do the math.
Exactly. We're going to think this through logically, and whatever this person's decision is, we'll follow it, even if the rest of us don't like it.
And I like how that was mirrored by the ending when they do take a vote to be like, okay, we are humans. We're the last few surviving people.
Yes.
Are we going to kill this guy? And then, the powerful moment of it's not unanimous, but they're like, but it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter. It's the correct decision for the mission.
Mm-hmm. But it's so interesting. That moment where they're all so defeated and Cap is sitting there tinkering with something and he's like, Icarus, like, are we good? And Icarus is like, no, you're dying. And he's like, yeah, I know we're dying, but like, are we going to make it, kind of thing? And then they're like, oh, man, I just love that moment because, Icarus is like, yeah, that would be the case if it was four crew members, but there's five. And he's like, excuse me? Who's the fifth? And Icarus is like, I don't know. Like,
it's such a good horror movie moment. It's so perfect, right? And Cillian Murphy's performance in that is great as well, because it is like, right? He's like, wait a minute.
Yeah, and you're kind of like, Okay, is Trey not dead? Like, did he fake it? I mean, he didn't look like he faked it, but
we know everybody else is dead. Like, it can't be Harvey. It can't
be. I'm like, so it must be Trey, must not be dead. And then I was like, my next thought was, oh my God, is Icarus human? Like, is Icarus actually some dude sitting in some room somewhere?
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh my God, is it an alien? And then the answer was sort of whatever that dude was. But I love that moment. It was like, they did that really, really well.
Yeah, no, yeah. There's a lot of really great shit in this movie. That it's like really good. It's way better than I think it has any like right to be.
Yeah.
Partly because Danny Boyle is a good director. He usually struggles, like in other Danny Boyle films. This isn't the first time where I've been like the third act is kind of all over the place.
Yeah.
But you like are really great at like building up this tension and mystery and suspense, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't in the payoff, but like it is, and then combine that with the cast, it is like really, I really like this movie a lot. I can see why it's totally a cult movie.
I can definitely see though that like a lot of people, I mean, it sounds like we're really selling it here and we really enjoyed it minus the third act, but I can also see a case where the first two acts would not be enough for a lot of people. You have to enjoy sci-fi. You have to enjoy like quiet, spacey stuff. And I think that wouldn't be enough for a lot of people.
No, I can see why people would bounce off of this for sure. Mm-hmm. But I think also like aged, because if this movie came out now, like I don't know if it would be successful, but it would be so much more interesting than like other space movies we get.
Yeah, but I do think that it would be like people would be disappointed because they'd be like, well, not a lot happened, you know?
I mean, a lot happened.
For sure. But in the beginning, it does feel all quiet and meditative, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think people need explosions and stuff these days.
I don't know about that. I don't think it would be financially successful.
Yeah, well, because they would have spent way more money to get this product.
Yes, it would have been. Yeah, things would have been changed. But I think like it is. Like, the part when they're fixing the shield at the beginning is, like, really tense. You're like, this is fucking insane. And then, like, the cuts to, like, what's happening on the ship, and you're like, oh, this is going to go bad. This is where everything goes wrong here, right? And another thing I liked, but I think it's a little aggressive, is when they're going, until they hit Icarus One, the closer they get, the more quick cuts of the crew. There's their faces come in for like a split second. And when they're on the ship, it happens more and more and more until they find them. And then it doesn't happen the rest of the movie. And like, I like that technique. I do think it's like a little, it does pull you out of the movie. Mm-hmm. And I think they did it a little too much. Like I liked the, I don't know, maybe like right before they get to Icarus, they do it like you do it once or twice. And then when they're on Icarus, you do it a little bit more. But they felt like they did it like 15 to 20 times. And I was like, okay, kind of removed me from the movie or broken the immersion a little bit. Because now I'm just like, oh, you're flashing me again? Okay. that worked. I knew what it was the first three times you did it. I don't think it's making it any more effective doing it this much. That's just me, though. And then I guess that's replaced with the shitty camera work or like the blurry shaky cam stuff.
I hated it so much.
It's so bad. I would wager to guess. I don't think it's going to be a surprise that I think this movie is better than Monsters. I don't know where Carolyn is on it, but.
I mean, it's hard. It's hard because. I don't know. Monsters just really surprised me. And I feel like. Sunshine, I had higher expectations, and then it kind of like let me down.
No, that's totally fair, right? Like it's
you
like that, if that's how you feel about it, that's how you feel about it.
Though there are things that I really liked in Sunshine, and in moments it did do more for me than Monsters, but I felt overall Monsters was a bit more even, except the script. Jesus, in Monsters that was bad.
The script is way better in this movie, partly because it's written by Alex Garland, who is my favorite working writer director.
Yeah,
and it's very much an Alex Garland film.
I did like the acting in this one.
Yes, the acting is significantly better. Partly because of the script in this one. Also, it's just like there's more for the actors to do, really.
Yeah. Yeah,
And there is no romance at all.
Yeah, except I kind of got the vibe that Kappa and Cassie were maybe a thing, but I also liked that it didn't matter.
No, they didn't have time for it.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, it showed that they clearly had a closer relationship than some of the other people, but it didn't matter because, like I said, there was no heroes, there's no villains, there's no romance. Like, there's none of those tropes that it normally falls into.
Yeah. No,
And I feel like these actors, it was, I feel like monsters spoke when it could have been quiet, and this movie was quiet and let the actors, like, do the acting without mm-hmm. script. I feel like the actors really gave a lot into this.
Yes,
they did. So yeah, no, you know what? I'll put it above Monsters just simply because the script was rough in Monsters. I feel like the overall plot in Monsters was good and more even than mm-hmm. whatever this pinbacker nonsense was. But I would feel like for acting and for dialogue, Sunshine was better.
Yeah. And I do think like everything, if you're like you cut out until you hit the pinbacker, this movie's plotting is so much better than Monsters.
Yeah.
And then the pinbacker stuff. That's a hard thing to do in a movie like this. Like, I don't have this, like the solution for the pinbacker stuff. It's like, if you're going to do that, gotta do it well.
Yeah. Cause it's wild.
At that point, even before the pinbacker thing goes, you know, they're all going to die. Like, yeah. No, they're not getting back. It's just like, are they going to succeed and then like slowly die on the ship? Or are they going to like fly the ship into the sun, essentially?
Yeah.
Are like the two options at that point. And then the moment that airlock blows, you know it's all gone. But
yeah,
it just doesn't work. And it's upsetting for a movie that was so strong.
And then even got like, really weird.
And I'm like, we like when movies get super weird. It's just like, you gotta do it.
Wish it could have been more rooted in reality.
Yeah, me too. Because it was until that moment. And then it was like, we're a fucking space horror sci-fi. We've big brained this all of a sudden. Like, we've ascended.
Yeah,
and it's whoa.
Yeah, I don't want to guess if it's a monster or a creature or a human. I want to know, you know?
Yes. I should say, as an interesting little fact, I agree with that. I don't want to guess. Tell me, please. Or show me, for God's sake. That they call him Pinbacker and not the actual person's name.
Yeah.
It's like we just know it's the captain from the other ship who was Russian, which is funny. But I should say that Hiroki Sanada's character, Kaneda, he changed the name because it was originally going to be Kanada. And then Hiroki Sanada was like, no, we'll make it Kaneda because that's more traditionally Japanese. So, you know, 2007, the actor was like, nope, you're wrong.
Yep.
I really like Hiroki Sanada as an actor. I wish he was given more to do in many things in his career because he deserves to be a lead and stuff, but he is never given that opportunity in English language films.
Mm-hmm.
Same with Michelle Yeoh is that, I mean, she has and is getting that opportunity now, but it is definitely she's in her 60s now. So, yeah. Like, it's a little later than, you know, you have these two, I think, like, superstars they could be. They were just not given the opportunity because they are not American.
Uh-huh.
And it's annoying to me, but they do some, like, it's not, though those two add so much to their characters because of their level of actors they are when they're really not that big of a part, like, at all. They don't matter.
Yeah.
In any way. And it's weird that, it's just weird that this is, I just can't see Chris Evans as anything other than Captain America. I can't.
You know, okay, I just came across a very interesting twist that I will leave you to marinate on.
Wait, you're leaving after this?
No. Oh. But there is a theory that the reason you never see Pinbacker clearly and the reason that Pinbacker doesn't really make sense in terms of like, how did he survive without oxygen? How is he just walking by everyone without them noticing? And the theory is that there is no Pinbacker and that Pinbacker is a figment of Kappa's imagination and is kind of the same paranoia that caused the first Icarus to fail the mission. It's basically like his madness because if you think about it, Kappa is the only person who sees Pinbacker. Michelle Yeoh gets stabbed in the back, so she never sees Pinbacker. Cassie is being stalked in the dark by Pinbacker, and then she stabs him, and then looks at him and looks like really confused.
And horrified, yeah.
Yeah. And
Mace never sees him.
Yeah, Mace never sees him. And so, yeah, they then Kappa comes along, Cassie, who's like bleeding to death, and she's just staring at him and is like scared because, you know, she was bleeding to death. And he's like, "Where's Pinbacker?" And she's just staring at him like, huh? I mean, she's in shock, so sure, that makes sense too. But anyways, then their whole fight scene.
So like Kappa's like disassociating.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And like then Pinbacker and him have this big fight in the middle of this giant open room. But he kind of pops out of nowhere. Like Cassie and Kappa don't watch him running across the room.
Don't hear
the empty room. Like and see him appear. So anyways, that is the big theory that I guess that's also because Kappa is manages to complete the mission with and Pinbacker's gone at some point. And I did wonder, like, where did he go? You know?
Well, it's like he's stuck on the other side with gravity, right? Like, the assumption is that he drops them so far that he can't get to them in time. Or, like, the fact that his fucking arm skin got ripped off, he's, like, done.
Yeah, that was really gross.
Effective and very gross. I mean, that's really cool and interesting. It does, like, it works, but also it's not in the movie. Like, that's not hinted at in the movie at all,
I
really.
Know. Now that I hear this theory, I like it way better. And I'm hoping that that's what they were aiming for. If that's what they were aiming for and then they just missed by not making it obvious enough, then that's disappointing. But not as disappointing as what I actually think they did do, which I didn't like. So in my brain, Pinbacker was a figment of his imagination, and I like it.
So not to just get on like this quote is not as bad as the quote from Monsters by the director, a movie that's about immigration but isn't about immigration. Danny Boyle described the character of Pinbacker as a representation of fundamentalism, which my guy, sure, I guess I could see what you mean by that, but not really in any way. That doesn't make the I guess like that's a cool thing to think of for this character, but it doesn't make it better. It still doesn't change how I feel about it.
Yeah.
In any way, and he then compared it to like it breaks the pattern of realism, and I'm like, okay, does that work in a movie like this? I don't know if it does, or the way that you did it didn't work, unfortunately. Yeah. I have a question for you that mostly, did you like the scene? I feel like this would make you laugh. When Mace and Kappa fight for the first time after because Kappa takes too long for the message or whatever. And then Rose Byrne is like, we have an overabundance of masculinity.
Yeah.
I was like, because I was watching with Adele and she laughed at that scene and thought it was, she was like, that's great dialogue. And I was like, okay, is it or is it a little on the nose?
It was very on the nose, but I think what made it funny, because I also laughed, but what made it funny was her delivery, which was completely deadpan. It was like, because it was just very much her being like, these idiots again. You know, I didn't like the line, but I thought the sentiment was very funny.
I'm trapped on a ship with a bunch of fucking morons.
And especially since she looks just exhausted the whole movie. And she's sitting there being like, they're fighting again. Someone just, they're being stupid. They're being boys, you know?
Yeah. Go down there, separate them.
Yeah.
Let's do this again. It very much felt like it wasn't the first time these two had clashed heads. And then I did like the apology scene. I thought that was
good. Oh, yeah, me too. Was that the apology? Yeah.
Consider it accepted. Okay. Immediately. It's very good. I liked it a lot. I think the good outweighs the bad for me.
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree.
Anyway, I think this is close to Monsters, just like as you said, just a little bit better. Because of the acting in the script. But the next movie we're watching is Tideland, which I still don't know at all what that is. Let me look up where if it is available anywhere for streaming. and we'll pick the next one for after.
Yeah, it's a Terry Gilliam film starring Jeff Bridges, Jennifer Tilly, some other people.
It is available on in Canada on Tubi and Mubi, which is hilarious.
Tubi and Mubi.
And also available for rent on Apple. That's the only place you can get it for rent.
Oh man, looking at this poster makes me not want to watch this film.
It's a bad poster.
It's a bad poster. The one on IMDb is much better.
Yes. And for the US, it's Tubi, Canopy, Fandor, Screenbox, things I've never heard of in my life, and available for rent on everything in the US. So,
okay, so it's a very American film.
Yeah, it's available in America. Terry Gilliam, you know, the thing I see is it on the poster is a girl's head on a tree holding a Barbie doll on her finger. Head on her finger. So, and then Jeff Bridges is below it. So I don't know what this is at all. That doesn't make that makes me more confused. Anyway, we'll spin the wheel for what we watch after that, which is going to be
what is it?
Mulholland Drive.
Yay!
So we'll definitely be going from weird to weird, I imagine.
Okay, Mulholland Drive starts normal.
You've seen it.
I have. I saw it in many years ago. I think it was first year, so probably like 10 years ago.
So Carolyn's not going to watch the movie before that one. I just rely on their memory.
Oh my God, can you imagine?
You would never do that.
No, I forget movies like instantly, so that we'd be talking about two separate movies, I swear.
No, that will be, I'm excited for that conversation, because I don't think we've ever talked about a Gilliam film or a Lynch film on here.
No.
And they're both directors that have a specific style, I guess is the nice way to put it.
Yes, and some cult followings, and then people who hate them.
Oh, what am I talking about? We have talked about a Lynch film.
Which?
Straight Story. Not a Lynch film. We just don't associate it as David Lynch.
Oh, Straight Story, yeah.
Yeah, it's not a Lynch film.
It's not a Lynch film. That's a film that's directed by David Lynch.
Yeah, it's not a Lynch film. And no, Gilliam. But anyway, unless there's anything else you want to say about Sunshine.
No, it was the bright spot of my week.
Okay, so Carolyn's not going to get to say where she is on the internet. I'm removing that privilege for that. So you can find me at James Willicks everywhere on the internet, except on Twitter, where O is a zero. And you can send us an email at letswatchpod@gmail.com. And it will also be in the description below.
You can find me at CarolynDunk93. And my web series is hosting an Indiegogo campaign. So you can find that. You can just search Manor House and you will find that there.
You're not going to tell people that you reached the goal?
We did reach our goal. We reached our main financial goal, but we're looking to reach our stretch goal now. Which means we'll have more money for things like feeding our actors and hair and makeup budget. So if you don't want us to look whack, please help us reach our stretch goals as well.
Yes. And that will be in the description and on Twitter as well. We will post it there if people are so inclined to support the baby, Carolyn.
My baby.
And her baby.
Yep.
But Tideland. For next, Carolyn ruined by doing the pun now, so there's no like funny outro for this. So thank you for ruining the end of this. I appreciate it. And when I'll get mad again, because it will be the last thing I hear when I edit this.